I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to another Damn Fine Espresso. Joining me in this new year, we're recording this in the old year. When you listen to this, it'll be the new year, is Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Julie. It's like being in a time machine, it seems.
We have our own TARDIS. Now, you told me over the chat that you went to see some concerts. So I'm going to jump right in and I want to know all about them.
Well, concerts, and more specifically, not classical concert, not rock concerts, but I've been going to film music concerts. And I guess frequent listeners of this podcast will know that that is kind of the angle that I've come into movies to in general. Soundtrack and film music was kind of my entry when I was a teenager. And I've been going to a couple of them, and I've recently seen Back to the Future and the James Bond Spectre in concert.
Of course you did, because you are a super fan, aren't you?
I am. And thankfully, they've started also putting these soundtracks out as concert versions, which for a long time was just not in the works. And for Bond, that's now slowly coming up with the Daniel Craig ones, at least.
Yeah. How big is the orchestra on that one? That must be like huge.
It's massive. It was like 80 plus people, including a lot of percussion, the brass, the double pianos, and then the electronics in addition to it. It was very impressive. The stage in Luzern at the venue was packed.
That is awesome. Because I remember with movie soundtracks, with the OST type CDs that you used to be able to buy, they tended to be pretty flat. I mean, you kind of long for this depth that you would get like on a classical CD. Like, give me Tchaikovsky with all the brass, please. You know, and that's sort of been lacking. So I was very excited to talk about this, especially James Bond with 80 plus people on the stage. Oh my God, how many violinists are there?
It was amazing. I think the sound at the Luzern is called the KKL, so the Culture and Congress Center in Luzern, is among the best acoustic stages in Switzerland. So it's always super exciting that these film music concerts have been taking place there for 20 plus years now. And they have been among the leading concerts or leading orchestras worldwide to start with those live to the film performances. And others have now taken this up in other countries as well. But it was actually this Swiss orchestra that was quite among the first ones to do Lord of the Rings, trilogy. And then later on, also Pirates of the Caribbean. And I've tackled more and more such projects.
Star Wars
as well.
Obviously.
I have tickets for Return of the Jedi in March next year. So yeah, also the Star Wars, thanks, I guess, to the Disney takeover. Actually, they've been able to organize that with those studios as well, that they have a cooperation going on where they get the rights to do the next movie and the next franchise. So it's actually...
Right. Because they used to do Star Wars in Amsterdam, but that was mainly just on the cultural market. It was one of those attention grabbers that they did. They put an orchestra on stage in the open air in the on the square and did the Empire March really loud. So.
Oh dear! Of course,
Of course they did. So they used to sort of do them, but they were a little bit gimmicky. I think real concerts of a film score. I think that's pretty recent, actually.
It is. I think I remember the beginning they had more of these best of concerts.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they would play a composer's most famous works, especially John Williams or Jerry Goldsmith and Michael Giacchino, kind of to give a tasting menu of their greatest hits. And I think it was probably Psycho by Bernard Herrmann, which was among the first. And then, of course, the whole Charlie Chaplin Live to Silence films that were among the to be performed like that. Because I think at first, also to me, it seemed impossible that an orchestra would be able to play through a two-hour movie and play alongside the special effects and the dialogue and still make sense. Mm-hmm. And somehow now with the sound mixing, they figured out how to do that and they get those copies from the studios that have no score and probably adapted the sound a little bit so they could actually play along and still hear the film, but also hear the music at the same time.
That is so awesome. I keep getting envious about, they sometimes do these silent films with a live accompaniment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to go to one of those, but I haven't been able to yet.
It's quite a different experience, I find, to have a movie that is, you know, where you're so focused on the music and there's no actual dialogue or sound alongside, and then compare it to a movie that you know already in the whole mix of everything that you hear normally, and then to have the music stick out so much and to hear all the detail of things you kind of were passively familiar with, but you didn't hear what goes into the dynamic of a scene, for instance, that is purely music. And I think Indiana Jones was among the best examples. The very first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark, it was so spectacular to see how much of the rhythm of the film is actually done just by the music. And then the rest is just kind of on top of that. So that's amazing to me.
Also my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
It is. I've just recently seen it again. It's really probably the best.
Maybe The Last Crusade.
Yeah, I'm between
also
those two.
Big favorite, yeah. So I was really interested in this because we also did the podcast about, among other things, Elevated to the Gallows.
Yes, I remember, exactly.
And Miles Davis did a sort of do the recording to the images of the film, which is kind of a reverse to what you've just experienced, is that an orchestra basically accompanies the film from a score that already exists instead of improvising to the image that is on the screen.
Yeah, that's a beautiful kind of counterexample because in a way you can't reproduce that. So you couldn't do Elevated to the Gallows in a live performance unless someone was able to play just as well as Miles Davis, which seems, you know, next to impossible.
Well, we could have maybe we could have Wynton Marsalis or someone. He's very knowledgeable about jazz history. He's very, very sort of, luminary of the history and the tradition of all sorts of, you know, jazz. He might be able to put it.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. We should put it to him and
ask him. Put it
are
on
you willing
Twitter.
To do it? Yeah, but I guess it shows that some performances are just so unique that in a way reproducing them makes no sense. I would say this recording is best just listened on a record and just appreciated with the film or just that one recording. But I think with the orchestra sound of these soundtracks, what's amazing is that, like you said before with Spectre, the sound just kind of gets mixed in with the rest of the film and the CD is not really of great quality.
No.
And then that really adds so many layers to the experience when you see, aha, this music was actually much better than I imagined or remembered it from the CD or from the movie.
It's such a pity. Really is, because I think it is sort of, there must be a market for like really good recordings, like classical music type recordings. But I suppose it would be so expensive to produce, you know, to get a physical orchestra in there somewhere, like the olden days with like 15 microphones and the conductor and then have a big old mixing panel and try to get it. I suppose that would be prohibitive cost-wise, but it is a pity.
Well, there are a couple of orchestras, especially one from the Czech Republic, that has actually become quite famous at recording scores that have never been put on CD or on record before, and then sometimes also replay old scores in better quality, and they've done quite a good job. I think it probably quite cheaply compared to what it would cost if you did it with the London Symphony or
if you did it in Los Angeles.
Exactly so they have kind of carved out a market for themselves and then really put some scores on CD for the very first time. And that quality is noticeably better than the original soundtracks they put out from, like, you know, big labels that don't really know much about the trade.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are some very beautiful ones from anime films, like the very famous ones, like the Ghibli ones. They do have good quality soundtracks, and they are very, very beautiful. I don't know if you're a fan.
I'm actually not yet familiar with that genre of movies.
Okay.
I know that we've been talking about it, or you've been mentioning them a couple of times, but it seems like one section of movie making that I haven't really gone into. So I'm sure I've heard the music before, but not very consciously. But very happy always to see that they're putting out a new rare Bernard Herrmann, for instance. I was thinking of Endless Nights, this Agatha Christie film that wasn't very good, but Bernard Herrmann did one of his last scores for it. And they just recently recorded that. And it's of course stunning to hear a Herrmann played by a modern day orchestra for the very first time.
Wow.
And to hear it in that quality. So that's definitely something I keep collecting.
Yeah, because you mentioned that film. And, you know, strangely, I'm sorry to go on a tangent, but I'm an Agatha Christie, let's call it a fan. I've written an article about her. I thought I'd read all her books. I've seen most of the adaptations, even the very obscure ones, and I had never seen this. I think it's the only one I've never seen.
It is worth seeing just for the score. I must say the film certainly has some weaknesses, and it's a very odd Agatha Christie story. I didn't even know.
The book is old.
I would think so, because the film is very, very odd. And I would be curious to see if it compares well to the novel in terms of like the plot. It seems very un-Agatha Christie-y. But it's worth seeing for the locations and the music and some of the performances.
I'm interested also in that score, because, you know, you feel like, if something like that is in existence, I should know about it, but I didn't. So thank you for pointing that out to me.
Well, it's been very recent. So I think it's because of that, that through releasing the soundtrack, the movie became a little bit more popular again.
Hmm.
And then which always happens to me is that I hear music from a film and then I only want to see the film afterwards, because it puts it on a map somehow, especially those obscure 60s, 70s movies that you wouldn't get otherwise. But the music is somehow more famous than the film itself, and often also much better.
Yeah, true. This gives me a rather nice bridge, because I promised you I'd bring a surprise for today.
Finally, I've been waiting for days.
Speaking of movies that perhaps lean on their soundtrack a lot, this is a little bit of a hidden gem, and I hope you've never heard of it before, and otherwise maybe people in our audiences have never heard it before.
Tell me.
There was this movie that I used to love when I was a kid and I didn't know anything about movies. And then on my post timeline, Ferran Smith-Namay, this beautiful film writer and historian, pointed out that Roger Avery and Quentin Tarantino on their podcast, right, their new podcast, The Video Archives, had discussed a movie that I've always loved and nobody else seemed to. It has Christopher Lee. It has Colin Blakely. It is directed and written by Billy Wilder.
Oh, dear.
Yes. And it's called The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. I know the soundtrack.
Exactly.
I have the soundtrack.
This is what made me think of it. This is what made it so perfect, because it has this beautiful Miklos Rosa soundtrack.
Exactly, of course.
Got not a soundtrack recording of it, but the violin concerto that the soundtrack is based on. Miklos Rosa, just for our audience here, has also done films like Double Indemnity. We mentioned it very briefly in our Non-More Noir podcast. And he has also done Ben-Hur.
Famously.
And the music is so beautiful that on the Tarantino and Avery podcast, they played a snippet of it, and I just drew this enormous breath like you do when you get home after a long trip, right? I was like, it is so beautiful. And I thought you made another film, but surely you know the soundtrack.
I do. It was among the releases of one of the soundtrack labels that I buy almost everything from. There's one in Spain and one in France that puts out all these soundtracks lately. And The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes was among them, I think, last year or the year before. And I have never seen actually the movie, even though I would like to now that I know the music. But it's a very interesting case because, as you said, everyone knows the violin concerto, but actually the music itself and what he did to transform the concerto into the film score was not known. And now with that release, you kind of can play both of them alongside each other and compare. So it's quite interesting, that interaction between classical music and film music.
Yeah, and the movie, I really think it's an unseen gem, because it's a very classically made film, almost austere in a time when that was no longer fashionable.
Mm-hmm.
So it boomed.
Massively, I think, yeah.
So, but when you see it nowadays, without all that context, I really think it is just such a fabulous, fabulous classical. Even the opening sequence where you have an entire blur and then the camera focuses on a nameplate, which is polished copper, and you see all the London landmarks reflected in the copper, like the double-decker buses. It's just a wonderful, wonderful film. So see it, not just for the score.
So much attention to detail, yeah.
Because it's an underseen classic that may have only been seen by Billy Wilder completists who just want to see everything that Billy Wilder has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a beautiful film.
And Christopher Lee, you know, that we've just recently talked about as well. And who will feature soon in one of our blog articles. He's just done a couple of amazing things. And I think I remember that was probably alongside The Wicker Man among one of his favorite roles to play, that he was able to play in The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, if I remember correctly. But Julie, one piece of advice, if you have not seen that other Billy Wilder film from the 70s, that is just as obscure and has just as beautiful a score by Miklós Rozsa as The Private Lives of Sherlock Holmes, you have to watch Fedora, his last film. Because I think it might have been his the movie he did after Sherlock Holmes. And it you haven't seen it, right?
No.
It stars William Holden, and he tracks down this movie star, this mysterious movie star called Fedora on her Greek island. She's withdrawn from the movie business after some scandals, and he keeps trying to go to that island and meet her, but they try to keep him away and threaten him not to come too close because her secret might be discovered. And in a way, it's kind of his companion piece to what he did with Norma Desmond, of course, in the 50s. So Sunset Boulevard. So it's kind of like the bookend piece of that, but just with the aging star that has withdrawn to this island. And the score is fantastic. And it bombed just as much. I think even fewer people have seen this one than Sherlock Holmes. So those would be two great movies to watch alongside each other. For the films, obviously, but also for the Rozsa music.
Yeah, because if it has a Rozsa score, I think I'll probably recognize the score.
Definitely.
If not the movie itself, because I think it's interesting. He's such an enormous name, I think, in movie music. I must have heard most of what he's done.
You will have. I think it's on a few of his best of albums. The thing is that I have the actual record from the 70s, but I don't think it's had a very wide release on any other format. I think it's still one of the few scores that hasn't had a specialized release. Yeah, it is. So I'm kind of waiting for it, but sometimes you have to wait for decades. I've been a fan of film music for 30 years now, and I've seen so many scores that took 10, 20 plus years to even be unearthed from some archive, and then suddenly the score is there and they're able to do these very limited releases, 500 pieces worldwide, and I'm always one of the first, you know, to grab them. So I have lots of these rare releases. Fedora, unfortunately, is not among them.
Well, what I'd sort of like to do, like with The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, they brought out a Blu-ray from Eureka. So it's from the Masters of Cinema series. And if I understand correctly, they did polish up the audio quite a bit for the Blu-ray. So that is also a way to get access to a good quality soundtrack with the movie without having to go out and try and find the most obscure CD that you can, you know, or have to order it in, and it will take like months to get there.
Exactly.
And sometimes they just polish up those Blu-rays, and I would lobby, but I'm not an insider. I have no idea what that would cost, but it would be so nice if they put the soundtrack on there separate from the film, wouldn't it?
They have done that for a while, and I think it was for many movies the very first time that you were able to access scores on a separate track and then hear them. But of course, the disadvantage is a little bit that you have to watch the entire movie including the silent bits and including the bits where the score is kind of like tampered down a little bit. It doesn't sound mm-hmm. quite as good as it should. So it's a good alternative to not having it. But I'm happy that, for instance, for, what was it, James Bond, Tomorrow Never Dies, they just released the full soundtrack for the very first time 25 years after the movie.
Yeah, that's a long time.
In actually great quality. So you can actually put on the CD and just listen to the full music experience without actually having to sit through the 2+ hours of the film. But right. it takes long. I think licensing and probably just not really having someone who knows where the material is.
Or where the rights are at, right?
Because exactly.
Who actually holds the rights to separate soundtrack of a film? The studio, I'm guessing.
It's the studio. And I think with some studios, it took years and years before they were aware that this was a market. And especially Universal, they've just put out Frenzy by Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the score that's on in the film, but also the Henry Mancini score that was rejected by Hitchcock. So you could hear that for the first time. And that was only possible because someone at Universal finally understood that there was a market and an interest for that. And one of the labels put it out for the first time and said, okay, we're going to produce the CD if you give us the rights. But I think mm-hmm. the deal is probably that they can only do it for, I think, normally it's like 5,000 copies worldwide. So they can only do it for very limited releases. And then you have to be on the ball to know like where to get them.
Oh.
It's a fascinating world that I've, you know, kind of in the middle of, because I always get these newsletters and I know when to look and when to order. But it's a bit of a race among fans that you can get stuff once it drops.
Wow, I didn't even know that was like a subculture thing.
It is. It's right? Quite massive.
I'm sort of like, what I used to do was to figure out which performers did a particular piece of music. It was usually, I don't know, Georges Antaï or something, you know, modern. And then figure out who was a performer and then find a CD by that performer and just check whether any of those soundtracks were on there. So this is how I got the Roger score for Private Life of Sherlock Holmes. Again, back in the day, way back in the day, because I love the soundtrack so much. I just bought the Heifetz CD, the Yasha Heifetz CD, who's a very famous violinist, that had the violin concerto on.
Right.
And that was the way I got to it, because otherwise, you know, I'm going to be, this was before YouTube. That yeah. ages me, but that was before YouTube. So I had to go to Concerto, which was a beautiful record store near my home, and ask. And go like, I'm looking for this particular piece of music.
Well, thank God there are these people still and these stores that can at least give you some pointers, especially for other performances or something that is very rare that not even YouTube might have. Because, of course, that helped. I remember there was Napster first and then there was yep. YouTube, who would for the first time, often illegally, give you music that you had wanted since childhood.
Right.
And now exactly. with YouTube, I think at least you can get some back quality versions, sometimes quite decent of, for instance, film music and stuff that is out of print. But I'm really grateful that there are these labels now that have realized that is really a market and there is an interest in all these scores. It has reappreciated by studios and labels.
And it kind of weirds me out because I remember when I was little, I had a record, so a vinyl record of The Sting, the movie The Sting, right? With these beautiful mm-hmm. ragtime songs, Scott Joplin, I think. So that existed then. I mean, movie soundtracks on vinyl with big branding on it, like The Sting and Newman and Redford. So I wonder what takes us so long to figure out that these productions are just wanted, that we really, really like that sort of stuff.
It's a good question. I think some have understood it finally because more and more stuff is coming out. But I think that the hook or that the problem is mostly that you don't really hear about it in a wider sense. You have to be in these niche cultures and have access to them. And then, you know, that takes a bit of research and dedication to do that regularly if you're just looking for particular things. I just happen to be... That just happens to be one of my main things. So I know about it, but But there is never a bigger piece of information about now this has been put out. You have to know where to look.
Right. And also with concerts, I mean, they tend to, at least here, I don't know what it's like there, but they tend to go for, as you say, Lord of the Rings or the Star Wars or the big brassy pieces. Whereas there is so much beautiful music that I'm like, deserves kind of a place in there. It deserves to be played in an actual, you know, real concert hall with great acoustics and, you know, an entire orchestra.
Yeah,
even if it's just 32 people, just a 32-piece orchestra and a synthesizer. I really don't care.
Is but there a particular sort of film that you would like to see? Like, what would be the one film or the type of film you would like to see live in concert? Is there such a thing?
Well, okay, let's. Well, if we're going to stick on topic, right? The Rosa scores, I think, Double Indemnity, the score there.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of Brass in Ben-Hur, I think.
Oh, imagine a Ben-Hur four-hour concert. That would be monumental in so many ways.
Exactly. Something of the sort of more classic Hollywood-y type thing. And of course, I think Bernstein, but I think that's been done. Bernstein, Gershwin, sort of crowd pleasers. Classic Hollywood evening.
Yeah, and it does make a difference because contrary to like more modern scores that we at least know in some form or another in good quality, often what's quite amazing about classic Hollywood scores is how bad the soundtrack recording was. So this tinny sound, if I think of, you know, Rorschach in the 50s, it just sounds very reduced in scope and quality. So imagine a true Ben-Hur performance.
Yes.
I've seen it a little bit with Vertigo by Herman that I've seen 3-4 times in concert now. It's always something I go back to whenever they play it. And of course, it's mind-blowing if you hear, and so touching to hear the score alongside a good projection of the movie. It's as if you've never seen the movie before.
Yeah.
And so that is the most amazing enlargement of a score that you can have to kind of elevate it from that idea that people had, you know, like when before DVD, when you just watched the 4:3 square versions of the film that were like pan and scanned. And then for the first time you saw the restored version. I mean, it's the similar effect, but it's even more physical, I feel, with the music.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, these things do exist because they do them at the Oscars. They, you know, the film music that's been done that year. I think they have an orchestra. There has to be a way. Well, you know what we'll do? We'll ask Elon Musk
to finance a
performance of Ben-Hur with live music and horses.
Absolutely. At least do something sensible with his money for once.
Absolutely. Okay. So do you have any important final thoughts? Something that you want to get off your chest still? And as we're still recording this in the olden year.
Exactly. Well, I think just for if people are interested in, you know, scores and want to find out more about them and want to get them, we can definitely point to some good labels and good websites where you can go to. And I think soundtrackcollector.com is just a good starting point if you want to really see if your favorite movie's score has been released in some form or another. Just go there and they kind of give you any release, any piece of information, any forum you can. I wrote into so many forums, I would like to have this score released. And then magically a few years later, I don't know if it was me or just a thread that started to develop, something was released. So if you look for something and you have the impression, like you said, you can't find it or you have no access to it, there's certainly a starting point. So go there and find out.
Very cool. Okay, in that case, I think we're out of time. So I want to wish you a very happy new year, even though it's technically already the new year.
Well, I think it's still valid for a few weeks in the new year. Of course, the same from my side as well. And we hope, of course, that you will listen in whenever we go for another espresso or coffee or cup of culture.
Absolutely. Join us next time on A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.